This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for June 1st, 2017. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today, a report on the Maine Board of Environmental Protection's approval of the Juniper Ridge landfill expansion in Old Town. And we look at Trump's international and national stance on climate change. Today, the Maine Board of Environmental Protection voted unanimously to approve the expansion of the Juniper Ridge landfill in Old Town. The landfill is state-owned but privately run by Casella Waste Systems, which is looking to double the size of the current landfill. There has been long-time public opposition to the expansion because of its potential impact on water, its impact on local communities, including the Penobscot Nation, and an operational policy to avoid restrictions to accept out-of-state waste by minimally processing waste and then reclassifying it as in-state waste. There is also continuing concern with disposal of the landfill's leachate and its impacts on the Penobscot River. We spoke earlier with Ed Spencer, an Old Town resident and logger, an intervener in the process. Thanks for joining us this morning, directly following the Board of Environmental Protection's vote on the expansion for the Juniper Ridge landfill. Tell us what their decision was, what happened, and where we go from here.
Well, they voted unanimously to approve the expansion. It was 6-0. They discussed it and listened to presentations by DEP staff. I got 5 or 10 minutes to speak. The applicants, Casella and, Casella spoke for the state, as usual. And
Casella, again, being the operator.
Exactly.
The private operator.
The state, as owner, didn't say a peep. They delegated to Tom Doyle, who works for Pierce Atwood Law Firm, and probably shouldn't say much more about that. But there was a discussion because, you know, we'd gone through the process where, you know, we had the public hearing last October, and then they came up with a proposed draft license. Then they solicited comments, they just voted unanimously. It appeared that the decision had already been made before the BEP meeting started today. Mm-hmm. It seems like they kind of had their ducks in a row. Somebody was going to make this motion, and they were all going to approve. And I don't know how that happens if there's an unseen hand, if somebody has influence and, tells them what to do. But be that as it may, what happens now is because this public hearing was conducted by the Board of Environmental Protection, not the department.
Yep.
Okay.
Not the Department of Environmental Protection. Yep.
It can't be appealed to the agency. It would be like you can't appeal the BEP's decision to the BEP,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is why we pressed to have it heard by the department in the first place. And I just got to say, I think in a way they put a lot of pressure and an awful lot of responsibility on the BEP. And these are citizen volunteers. And yet I think they kind of hang them out to dry so that the DEP doesn't have to, bear the responsibility for the decision.
And is that the final decision now? Is there...
It's from the DEP and from the BEP it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We interveners, I think any citizen or organization can appeal this decision, and I think you would do that in a superior court of the state of Maine.
So there's discussion about doing that.
We've been some discussions already, and those will become more more frequent, shortly. So the timetable there is 30 days to file an appeal. I think it's 30 calendar days, so we'd be talking the 1st of July. And, you know, whether or not I would appeal, I don't have the financial resources to do it myself. Mm-hmm. It's possible to file an appeal as a citizen. You don't have to have an attorney, but you certainly need some legal advice. And, you know, at this point, I don't feel like I have access to the legal advice, adequate to help me to file something. But I think efforts will be made, and I'm reaching out to people, in advance of that. That people who care about these issues, perhaps we could find a way to come up with some funding. You want to contact me and work on that? My name's in the phone book, and I would be very happy to support any reputable organization that wanted to appeal this decision. So now they have their permits in hand, mm-hmm. from the DEP, which is the regulating agency, and there are actually two permits. There's one kind of the standard solid waste permit. The other one is the NRPA, that's Natural Resources Protection Act permit, so they've got both of those. There's two other permits that they need to acquire. Mm-hmm. One of them is from the United States Army Corps of Engineers. The other permit necessary is from the City of Old Town. Planning Board needs to issue them a permit.
And Spencer, this has obviously been years of organizing and educating and real grassroots citizen efforts to research and resist this landfill expansion. Can you speak a little bit to that and remind people, we have covered this a number of times, but what's, in a thumbnail sketch, what's at stake here with that expansion?
I think what's really at stake here is Maine's future with the solid waste industry. The operator they have selected, Casella Waste Systems, is a multi-state operation. They're publicly traded, so they have territory all the way from Pennsylvania up through New York State and all of New England. And our state seems to be surrendering control to them. One of the things I protested this morning in front of the BEP was that they have language in this license that identifies NewsMe, which is a Casella subsidiary, but it's basically Casella, it's wholly owned. Mm-hmm. There's language in there that says that NewsMe is, quote, acting as an agent on behalf of the Bureau of General Services, end quote. So I think we need to be really, really concerned about that. You've got this for-profit, publicly traded, widespread corporation, and now somehow they've been deputized by our BGS, which is within the Department of Economic and Community Development, DECD, mm-hmm. As an agent. Well, what? So they have some kind of authority? Is it just a shiny badge? Or what? Do they get to take the lead? I mean, they always have. That no one from the state as owner ever says anything. They've never denied Casella anything they've wanted. So that's my chief concern, and one of the reasons it's concerning is that from the beginning, the whole reason for having the state be the owner of the landfills was because the state as owner is exempt from United States Commerce Clause rules that make it difficult to prohibit things like interstate commerce. But as a state, as an owner, is a market player. So you can say, we don't want out-of-state waste into our landfills, which was the whole premise beginning in 1989 of why Maine has gone this way to having only state-owned or publicly-owned landfills in the future. But what's happened is Casella, with the acquiescence, I would say, of state legislature, state regulators, state as owner, has managed to create loopholes and creative definitions so that they can bring out-of-state waste into Maine. You know, I would confidently say that fully 40% of this 8 million cubic yard pile of debris here in West Old Town was discarded outside of our borders. And that's very concerning, and that seems to resonate
came from outside of
everybody,
the borders.
Not just, you know, people who identify as progressives or, you know, I think that's across the spectrum because, you know, damn it, we don't want to have to take care of other people's waste. We accept the responsibility for our own waste, and we're trying to do a better and better job, you know, reducing our landfill materials, recycling, composting, getting the organics out, pay to throw, all the proper responses to our solid waste needs, and yet we are probably accepting large amounts of other people's waste from other states where they don't have to be as responsible as we're expected to be.
And while jeopardizing water quality
exactly,
in Maine.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the well, there's a couple of things. For one thing, the landfill itself is, I don't think right now, I don't think we could prove that it's leaking. But we can expect that at some point it will. And, you know, it might take till after Casella has gone away. And then, you know, that would be somebody else's liability. So that's a long-term time bomb threat for future generations. But
you are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. Today, the Maine Board of Environmental Protection voted unanimously to approve the expansion of the Juniper Ridge landfill in Old Town. We are listening to part of an interview we did earlier with Ed Spencer, a resident of Old Town, intervening against that expansion.
I'm sure you're aware of this long effort to restore the Penobscot River system, mm-hmm. which has been, I think, a model program nationally to work with all the stakeholders to remove some dams and bring back sea-run fisheries and stimulate the whole ecology, the whole environmental system from, you know, way, way up into as far as the Penobscot River, I think it's the second largest drainage in New England, all the way down into the Gulf of Maine and beyond. And it's working. And especially in conjunction with all the paper mill shutdowns. I mean, 10 or 12 years ago, there was 6 or 7 paper mills on the Penobscot River. Now there are 0. Okay, which means, in a way, I think practically speaking, the river is running cleaner than it has since probably World War I, so 100 years. But at the same time, now we're taking the leachate, which some describe aptly as dump juice, you know, what the liquids that filter down through the waste as it decomposes, then is collected and trucked down to Old Town, to the former paper mill wastewater treatment plant, and it's barely treated. Okay, they adjust it for pH a little bit. They aerate it to get rid of BODs, you know, so in other words, they try to get out the, neutralize the materials that would rob the river of its oxygen. So they do that much. But there's nothing done to remove things like lead, arsenic, you know, other metals, toxic compounds we don't even know about. And it's not a small amount. It's about 10 million gallons per year. And you know, so after it's aerated, it's basically sent into the river. And it's not clear just what's going on there, but I'm sure we're going to find out more about this. But I don't believe it's diluted. They don't, you know, when the paper mill was functioning, they bring lots of water in, and they mix it with their waste, dilute it, and, you know, there's levels that are determined to be safe to go into the river. But here, you know, at the time we asked during this process, there wasn't dilution going on, and it wasn't clear whether this was a steady trickle, you know, as it comes in. It comes in, you know, something to the order of 800,000 gallons per month. So we're not sure, you know, if it comes in and it's aerated for a week and then that stuff's put in, you know, let it go in, or else if they collect it for a month, put it in all at once. So you can imagine the concerns of the citizens, and especially members of the Penobscot Nation, who do have special sustenance fishing rights. And they are upset, and, you know, we're all upset about this, because whether you're a Native American or not, I mean, you want the water to be clean, and this is such a threat, especially where the river was being cleaned up otherwise.
And so that's something that it continues and has been going on for a number of years while the Juniper Ridge landfill has been in operation.
Right. And that's...
And will?
Probably, you know, that's a whole separate and very important issue. The leachate has to go someplace, and...
Ed, we just have a couple minutes left. Is there anything you want to add? Here again, we're saying the BEP has come to the decision that they will permit the Juniper Ridge landfill expansion.
Well, this process began about a year and a half ago with the public hearing. And from the beginning, I'd like to tell my fellow citizens that this has been a fair and open and comprehensive process. But unfortunately, I can't say that. There were issues such as environmental justice that were taken off the table when we raised that as an issue. So I'm disappointed in that we spend a lot of time, a lot of human resources doing this, but at the same time, it's not a level playing field. So let's not kid ourselves. And, you know, I would still take part in, you know, working, addressing these issues through the DEP and the BEP, but it's hard to picture it as a fully fair system, unfortunately, and it makes me sad to say that.
Well, Ed Spencer, we really appreciate you speaking with us today and keeping us up to date on these issues as you've been working on them.
Well, any time, and you know, I really appreciate everybody in the media and the alternate media, whatever, you know, who are paying attention to this, because it's important that we spread the word what's going on and put our heads together and think of some solutions to these problems.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll be in touch with you in the future. Again, that was Ed Spencer, Old Town resident and logger and intervener in the Juniper Ridge landfill expansion. You are listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio. We now turn to Trump's international and national stance on climate change. We're speaking with Erica Lennon, the Center for International Environmental Law's senior attorney. So this afternoon, just prior to airtime, Trump will make an announcement on whether he will withdraw the United States from the International Paris Agreement on climate change. Erica, can you begin this conversation laying out what it is that's at stake if the U.S. withdraws and what this could mean for addressing climate change at a global level as the effects of climate change accelerate?
Yes. So what's at stake is the Paris Agreement. In the Paris Agreement, the world agreed to take collective action on climate change because everyone is seeing the negative consequences it can have. And the Trump administration's decision, if he decides to withdraw, to do so is reckless and it's irresponsible and it's unjust. It will not, however, stop the global momentum that the Paris Agreement has brought with it. Other countries around the world have already indicated that they are committed to the Paris Agreement, regardless of what the U.S. does, and that they will continue acting on climate change, as will people in the U.S. and U.S. businesses and states and cities, both in the U.S. and around the world.
In seeing some of his international meetings this past week, we did get a sense that countries were prepared to work independently on a number of issues. So can you talk a little bit more about that independent efforts? Because certainly that had been a stumbling block for many years in the climate talks. If the U.S. did not make certain commitments, China or India or other more industrialized countries weren't prepared to do that. So that is quite a significant change in a global effort, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I think so. For years, it was in fact a stumbling block, and one of the reasons for negotiating the Paris Agreement was to sort of bring the U.S. Back into the fold after the U.S. left the Kyoto Protocol, as well as to bring other countries along. I think that the momentum we've seen over the years that climate change is creating greater and greater problems. And I think it has become very clear that if we don't reduce emissions to keep global temperature rise to no more than 1.5 degrees, it will only get worse and more people will suffer and the planet will suffer. And so as other countries have seen this, I think they realize that action is needed. And so at this point, because everyone is on board and wants to stop the damages that are happening from climate change, I think the momentum is there to keep the Paris Agreement going, and that they see the economic opportunities in moving away from fossil fuels and moving towards clean energy, so developing more wind and solar. And as that gets developed more and is becoming cheaper, fossil fuels phase out is easier to do, and I think the economic and the diplomatic momentum is there.
And China has now become, records show, the highest polluter right now, but the United States has been one of the highest polluters in the longest polluting at such high rates. Can you talk about Trump's rhetoric as well as his apparent policies as he's slashing national policy measures. Talk about his stance and denial of climate change, a comment on that, and then as you referred to where action on climate change might come from in the United States.
Yeah, so the U.S. is historically the world's largest emitter, and currently, though China is the largest emitter, I believe we are still second.
Mm-hmm.
Though if Trump tries to roll back all of the regulations that exist, that may shift, especially as China moves to go to cleaner energy and producing more from wind and solar. His denial of climate science and climate change will be catastrophic for both the U.S. and the world, because it will one, be bad for the U.S. economy, because the U.S. relying on coal or fossil fuels, I think it is clear that those are starting to fail and are industries that aren't going to be sustainable in the long run. And so not shifting to producing more clean energy technologies, I think, will hurt the U.S. economically. We also, as the largest emitter, have a moral responsibility to act on climate change because it is harming people, both here and abroad, and it's harming the planet. And so we have a responsibility to act, and not doing so undermines our credibility in the world. That being said, states and cities in the U.S. have committed to continuing to act on climate change. Just yesterday, I believe both California and New York came out with fairly strong statements that even if Trump withdraws from the Paris Agreement, they will still continue to take action towards shifting the economies towards clean energy. I believe California passed legislation. I know New York has said this because they see that, A, it's better for the economy of both of those states to shift to clean energy, and that it's better for the world to reduce emissions from climate change, which is also true in both places because, as we've seen, sea level rising and storm surges that are greater because of climate change cause a lot of damage and have caused a lot of damage to both of those states and other states, and that also costs a lot of money. And so doing something to address climate change now will help reduce the cost of addressing the harms it causes.
We just have a couple minutes left, and I know, again, as I said, as we speak, it's directly before Trump will make an announcement one way or the other. Anything you want to say in closing, reflecting on what is we're expecting to be a probable announcement of the withdrawal, but reflections on whether that's the announcement or not, what you see from your organization's perspective going forward?
Yes, thank you. So I think looking ahead to what may happen, I think it's important to note that immediate withdrawal from the Paris Agreement would violate international law, and that withdrawal would otherwise, that an announcement that we intend to withdraw will start a four-year clock during which much action can be taken. It will also weaken the U.S. position economically, diplomatically, and morally. And it won't stop the momentum that the Paris Agreement has created and the momentum towards reducing emissions to keep the world below a 1.5 degree temperature rise. And this momentum can be seen both here in the U.S. by businesses, by cities and states, by people, and by the world globally taking action on climate change. And organizations like Ciel will continue to press the Trump administration to protect the environment, and we will continue to work to make sure that the Paris Agreement is strong and is enforced and is implemented in a way that reduces emissions and keeps catastrophic temperature change below 1.5 degrees and protects the rights of people and the planet.
Great. Well, Erica Lennon with the senior attorney with the Center for International Environmental Law. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you've been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio.